It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson, and let's have a conversation. It is Thanksgiving week. There's so much to be grateful for. So grateful for these amazing shows that we're bringing to you. Today, we'll be talking about the Federalist Papers. Ben Martin, former Army Ranger, patriotic historian, has been bringing us through the Federalist Papers this year. We'll only have one more show on this, and we will have gotten through all 85 of the Federalist Papers. And as you all hopefully know by now, the Federalist Papers were written by James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and John Jay to make the case to the American people to ratify the U.S. Constitution. And today we'll be talking about the judiciary, and always loving having Ben Martin in studio with us. And thank you to the Harris family. They are the ones that are bringing this show to you. They are valued partners and sponsors. So thank you to them as well. And as we are looking at Thanksgiving week, there's so many things to be thankful for. But we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And producer Steve, we are so lucky to have our voices. Freedom of speech is inherent in the American idea, to be able to say what you think, even though it might hurt somebody else's feelings. Here at our show, we search for truth. Even though we certainly give opinions, we are always searching for truth, and we are always looking for liberty versus force, freedom versus force instead of force versus freedom. Steve.
It's ironic to me that we've been living with freedom of speech for 243 years. I mean, that's just a base count from 1776. But yet some people still don't seem to get it, and you still see it being hammered down right here, right under our noses.
Well, you know, we recently had the movie in town, No Safe Spaces, and that's all about freedom of speech. And even if you say something that might offend somebody else, that's some of the most important speech out there.
And this disease, if you'll allow me that, it's happening in all the worst possible places in terms of universities and
Media,
college campuses. But I'm just thinking,
where you work,
the hammering it into teenagers and, you know, college age students, it couldn't happen in a worse possible place or setting.
Well, and that is why they're doing that. And we're seeing it not only in colleges, but we're starting to see speech tapped down in our education system in K-12 as well. So that is why we are doing this show on the Federalist Papers, is so that we have an understanding of why the Constitution was put in place. And one of the big reasons, Steve, my takeaway is we've been going through this study with Ben Martin, of course, I've also been going through Vino and Veritas, is the American idea as protecting people's rights, the right of life, of liberty, and pursuit of happiness. That is the essence of the American idea, and that is what makes the American idea so unique.
Well, in the history of mankind, you stop and think about it, even at this particular stage in the 18th century or the 1700s, however you want to define that period, enough was known about human nature and certainly human history at that point that these things just didn't grow on trees, that the things that they were striving for were elusive and really tough to come by. So to put them in a document in the creation of the Constitution, to spell it out and to say, this is going to be our founding, this is who we are, this is how we choose to live.
It is a pretty amazing story. It's something to be really grateful for. And before we jump into that in segments 2, 3, and 4, thank you, Steve, Patty, Zach, Keith, and Charlie, for all of your support, your good work. Thank you to you listeners. You're greatly valued and appreciated. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. Be sure and check out my website, Kim Munson, that's spelled MONSON.com. All kinds of great information there. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. So today, Steve, our inspiration slash wisdom is from Calvin Coolidge. And Calvin Coolidge was president of the United States. I think I have it right down here. I put it in a different spot. He was an American politician and lawyer who served as the 30th president of the United States from 1923 to 1929. He was only 61 years old when he passed on. He lived from 1872 to 1933. They many times called him Silent Cal because he was typically a man of few words. But these are some of the most amazing quotes. So I decided to go to him. He has a great understanding of the Constitution, of the American idea. And this is our first inspiration slash wisdom of the day. He says, nothing in this world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. What do you think, Steve?
Well, I just go back to his descriptor, Silent Cal. How nice it would have been to have a silent Bill, a silent George, a silent Barack. I don't know about a silent Donald yet.
There's a lot of people that kind of wish that.
Yeah, they would love to have a silent Donald, but, you know, he's turning things around. So.
He is turning things around, and I'm grateful for that.
But back to the Federalist Papers, in terms of, I got to confess that I was basically, when you guys first started tearing into this at Vino Veritas with Dr. Kranewitter, or with what Ben does when he comes to visit, I was, you know, not overly well-versed in it, but it's obvious that these are the nuts and bolts of what the Constitution was to become. I mean, as a dumb teenager sitting in high school civics class, you just got this picture in your mind that they were sitting around Independence Hall and all these ideas
just tossing out ideas.
Yeah, it came to them somehow. Yeah. No, there was a lot of purpose, a lot of work that went into, and a lot of thought. Again, you know, in terms of looking at world history, human nature being what it is and what it's not, it's impressive.
And to put a document in place to protect everyday individuals' rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, absolutely amazing. So, but hey, I have three funnies for you before we get to break.
Oh boy.
You ready? Thanksgiving is the only holiday where you eat the mascot. Number two, if April showers bring May flowers, what do Mayflowers bring?
Okay, that's leftover from elementary school.
Pilgrims. Okay. And what's the difference between Election Day and Thanksgiving? On Thanksgiving, you get a turkey for the day. On Election Day, you get a turkey for 4 years.
Yeah, we've borne that out too many times.
Yes, true. So before we waltz all on into the Federalist Papers here, I want to give a shout out to my sponsors. These are valued people. And because of them, I'm on the air. As many of you know, I'm a total entrepreneur. I buy my airtime. And so I'm grateful to each of them. Karen Levine, Remax Alliance award-winning realtor. Jason McBride and the whole team over at Presidential Wealth Management. Hooters Restaurants. Susan Kochevar with the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. The Harris family bringing you the Federalist Papers. Liberty Oilfield Services. Jay Davidson with First American State Bank. Lauren Levy answering all your mortgage questions with PolyFi, Waters Edge Winery, Liberty Toastmasters, Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors, and Complete Colorado. I'm blessed to call each of these my partners, Steve.
Well, we've noted before, they're a great bunch of people, and they come to the studio, obviously to do the segments with you, to co-host, and they're fun to talk to. And they never just run in and then run right out. It's always a good time of, you know, a little bit of visiting and getting to know people. And I guess I'm lucky to know them on a first name basis. And yeah, great group of people.
And if you would be interested in being one of my partners, email me at kim@kimmunson.com. We are going to go to break here in just a moment. And then we have in studio with us Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian. He is a former Army Ranger. And he has such a love for the American idea. We've been going through the Federalist Papers, which is 85 essays that were written by John Jay, James Madison, and Alexander Hamilton, making the case for the ratification of the U.S. Constitution. And Steve, as you mentioned, they weren't just sitting around just throwing out ideas. They had a goal in mind.
It comes to bear. It becomes very plain. When you wade in to the Federalist Papers, you see just how much they actually poured their heart and soul into it.
And so today we'll be talking with Ben Martin about the judiciary. And this will be, I think it is Federalist 78 through 83. And so stay tuned when we come back. I promise you'll learn something with Ben Martin. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson, MONSON.com.
My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson, and we have conversations about really important issues, bring forth things to help, hopefully help you think. And it is Thanksgiving week. There is so much to be grateful for. And I'm grateful to have in studio with me my good friend, Ben Martin. It's great to have you here, Ben.
Well, I'm so happy to be here, too. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. We abound in blessings, and we need to make sure that we remember that. And one of the great blessings this year is we've been going through the Federalist Papers on the air. This show is brought to you by the Harris family and greatly appreciate their partnership on that. And so we've been working our way through. And so we want to talk a little bit about some things that we missed last show. So, Ben Martin, you are a patriotic historian, former Army Ranger. Where should we start?
Well, we should start with what we did last time that we fell short on, and that was when we were talking about the different essays that comprehend what the executive branch was all about, the president. And so I'd like to go back to the keystone, one of the essays in that seven, which kind of gives a summary of the whole thing, and then we'll go back into and talk about the competent powers there.
Okay. And what Federalist paper is that?
That's Federalist paper number 70. I'm sorry, I thought I said that, but I probably did.
70.
I probably
okay,
did.
Okay, there we go.
It's probably number 70. So in 70, it kind of outlines, 70 is sort of like for the executive branch, what number one was for the whole executive papers. It gave an outline of what was to come.
It's the
cliff notes are the outline, I guess you could say. And so in that, he lists the four ingredients which constitute energy in the executive, if you remember. And then he talks about the two other ingredients which constitute safety in the Republican sense. So both of those are really important. And we talks about, when he talks about that thing, about the energy in the executive, he says, well, he gives why that is so important. So I've got just a couple of little clips to that, a couple of sentences to that, which we'll give that again. And it says, energy in the executive is the leading character in the definition of good government. And he said that it is essential to the protection of the community against foreign attacks. It is not less essential to the steady administration of the laws and the protection of property against those irregular and high-handed combinations which sometimes in property interrupt the ordinary course of justice, and to the security of liberty against the enterprises and the assaults of ambition, of faction, and of anarchy.
Wow.
So that's the thing that he does, and he says to kind of sum up that little paragraph, he says, a feeble exercise implies a feeble execution of the government. A feeble execution is but another phrase for a bad execution of the government. And a government that is badly executed, or he calls it ill-executed, whatever may be its theory, must in practice be a bad government. So that's the essence, that's the importance of having energy in the executive.
And who was writing this particular?
This one is all of these now since 63, which Steve was just talking about. All of these are now written by Hamilton, okay. Because at this time, in the ball game, Madison has to go back to Virginia. He's not in New York anymore, where Hamilton and he have been writing the Federalist Papers. And one of the key reasons he goes back is he's in the state legislature there, but he's running for a representative in the House of Representatives and Congress.
Okay.
And this becomes a very key campaign, because he's running for that seat, because without getting that seat, he's running against Monroe, who will follow him as a president, the fifth president.
Interesting.
And so if he doesn't win this seat, then he does not become eligible to participate in Congress to author the Bill of Rights. That amendment, the Bill of Rights, those first 10, which are 12 amendments that he pushes forward in the first Bill of Rights. And if he's not there to do that, that's his promise to the people in all of these different conventions that they're having at the state level, that he told everyone that if you pass the Constitution, if you ratify the Constitution, I will make sure that we include a Bill of Rights. He didn't really believe in the Bill of Rights, but he understood that the Bill of Rights would not, if he didn't pass that, then if he didn't get that into the Constitution as the First Amendments, then the Constitution wouldn't be ratified.
But Ben, don't you find it absolutely amazing that Madison says, if you ratify this Constitution, we will put forward this Bill of Rights? And he kept his promise.
He kept his promise. And it was really hard to do. So he had to go back and do that, you know. And so he had to leave this, which was also, you know, key to the ratification of the Constitution. And he had to go back to work on this other thing that was probably even more key. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's really hard to tell, but I think over time the Bill of Rights has shown itself to be important. Mm-hmm. Although Madison and Hamilton, which we'll talk about in 84 next month, we will talk about that, how Madison too thought that the Bill of Rights was not only not important, but it might be dangerous mm-hmm. to our rights. And so we'll talk about that.
That'll be very fascinating. Quickly, would you recap those four ingredients,
sure,
please?
Sure, I'll be happy to do that. The four ingredients, which we were going to do, is constitute an energetic executive. For one, unity. And I have to explain that, because some people don't understand what that word is. And what unity means, unity in the executive means that there's only one executive. And that was really important, because states like Pennsylvania had a council of executives to run their state. And other people said, well, you have to have two, or you have to have more. You have to have a council. You can have one president or one governor. Well, but like Pennsylvania called their governor president of the state. He said, you can have one governor, but you have to have a council to advise the president and to participate with him in decision making. And they said, you know, they listed some examples from past history. But then to really understand those examples, you have to understand that they were always problems for the Roman Republic, for example. They had two councils, and that would...
Very difficult to get things done.
It was a good thing to have when the Republic was at war, because one council could actually run the government and the other one could run the war. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the war would get too big and they would have to split up, and one council would run a part of the war and another council would run another part of the war geographically. Mm-hmm. And then they would have to enlist a dictator. you know, and a dictator would have to come in and run the government.
Which would be the kind of the unity, the one person.
The one person to unify it again. But there were, it created a lot of problems, and especially when there wasn't any war, when you had two councils back in Rome, and then there was contention all the time, and there was, you know, there was arguments between the two councils. How do you resolve those? And so,
this was deliberation.
This was
these guys went through. They, as they were creating the Constitution, they were deliberating these things. They studied.
They really studied. Like I said, they were great students of history, and they went back through all of the recorded times of administrations to find out what worked and what didn't. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're all.
What a novel idea!
Yeah, what a novel idea it really is. But nobody had done that before. You could talk about a novel idea. It really was a novel idea, and they didn't. So when they did that, and then the what he talks about in there, well, when we talked about those four things, and we talked about all of those, we talked about unity, we talked about duration, and I think duration is easily understood, like how much time you're going to spend in office. And what he talked about in duration was that they came up with a four-year term, so you'd have enough time to become stable and independent, but not but he would still be answerable to the people. That was his other key thing. And then he talked about re-eligibility, meaning you could be elected again. And at the time when they wrote that, with George Washington there, they knew that nobody would abuse that. But that had to be changed, as you know, in Amendment 22, when FDR kind of overstayed his welcome there and really messed up our government, which we still have never recovered from, you know, all those new Bill of Rights that he did. And then the adequate provision for the support of the executive. And that really boils down to making sure that nobody can change his compensation, that the especially the legislature cannot change his compensation. That's what the effective support really meant. And the final one is the competent powers. And the competent powers we'll talk about just a little bit so that everybody knows. We talked about the veto power, the power to make treaties with the help and the advice of the Senate, and also appointment powers. You know, those are really important. Appointment. He appoints all the commissioned officers. He appoints all his deputies, all his, which we call, you know, the secretaries. And he also appoints ambassadors and other people. And then Congress gave him the power, and through the Constitution that was done, was that he gave them power to sometimes appoint the lower officials by himself. He didn't need the help of, or he didn't need the advice or the consent of the Senate to do that. And that's like myself as a commissioned officer in the military. You know, the president signs my commission, but he doesn't send it forward to the Senate for their approval, too.
Okay, just a quick question, because Dr. Kranewitter had said that, you know, there's been this question about the executive becoming a dictator, and he said that the enlisted men, when they take their oath to get in the military, they take an oath to the commander-in-chief, but commissioned officers take an oath to uphold the Constitution.
That's not I respect Dr. Kranewitter, but that's not totally true, okay? I mean, if you saw Fox and Friends on the morning of the Veterans Day, they swore in about 14 aliens, the immigrants that were here, and to be citizens. And then they also, citizens also, swear an oath to the Constitution of the United States to support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Okay.
And every one of those people that were sworn in had been at one time in their life as an immigrant here, or was it currently a member of the armed services. So it was a really, I recommend you go back and look at that program if you can.
Okay.
Very inspirational, very patriotic.
Okay. So, but the commissioned officers, they do take an oath to uphold the Constitution, right?
Yes, and okay. so do the non-commissioned officers and
okay.
enlist it.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's good to know. And because in that case, in effect, then if you're taking an oath to the Constitution, then that means that you would stand against somebody that was trying to use military power to take over the country.
Absolutely. And you have to, and they also talk about in there the execution of the orders of the officers appointed above them. you know, the lawful orders that were of the people that were appointed above them.
Okay. So fascinating. Ben Martin is in studio. We're talking about the Federalist Papers. Did we pretty much cover everything we wanted to do on the executive?
Unless you have any other questions about that, I just hit the big competent powers, you know, veto. He has to have that to establish himself, because as we talked about earlier when we were talking about the legislature, that the legislature's propensity is to suck all of the powers of the other branches into its own vortex, as they call it, impetuous vortex. Okay. And that then throughout history, you saw that the legislature would eventually take over the government and run it tyrannically.
So very good. So we've gone through the executive powers. We're going to go to break. When we come back, let's bite off the judiciary.
Let's do that.
Okay, so this is Kim Munson, the Kim Munson Show. We'll be right back. Okay. Hey, Jason McBride, it's Thanksgiving week, and I always love this because this is a time where we get some of your favorite quotes. So what do you have for us today?
Well, the one for today is great for a couple of reasons. One, I know you've been talking to Ben Martin, who's big on the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, individuality in the Constitution is anything but socialism. And, Kim, I know you're not a big fan of socialism either. So
I'm a freedom girl.
That's right. So I think that this is a good one. This one comes from Andrew Carnegie, who most people know the name, but may not know that he was Scottish-born. Mm-hmm. I never heard him talk. And I won't try to do the Scottish accent because I'll just embarrass myself.
But okay.
He said, individualism, private property, the law of accumulation of wealth, and the law of competition are the highest result of human experience, the soil in which, so far, has produced the best fruit.
Well, and, you know, his is an amazing story.
Right.
You know, he was an immigrant, and he had to work as a young boy. And there was a very wealthy, I can't remember if it was a ship's captain, but he had all these books. And on the weekend, he would open up his library to kids to read. And so Andrew Carnegie would go and read and read and read. And then he became this wealthy industrialist, which is an amazing story. And then gave a lot of his wealth away to build libraries all over the nation. The library in my little town was an Andrew Carnegie library.
Isn't that neat?
Isn't that amazing?
Isn't it neat how you see that so much when successful people kind of come from the dirt up? At the end of it, they always seem to want to give a lot of it back. And too directly, the causes that they feel created their success.
Well, and teaching a kid to read.
Right.
I mean, I read all the time as a child, and I think that it created this interest in the American idea. And, you know, Jason, as we're looking at Thanksgiving week, there's so much to be grateful for. And if you're grateful, you can't be angry and envious. If you're grateful, then you go out and you do your best every day. And so there's a lot to be thankful for this week.
Well, I would say that in the old days, Andrew Carnegie and those like him were looked up to as something to aspire towards, to reach towards. And I think it's a shame today that success is being demonized, as if anyone that is successful, and especially the ultra-successful, only got there by stepping on the backs of or taking success away from someone else. And I don't tend to believe that.
Well, I don't believe that. Those that have gotten so successful is because they've created a service or a product that everyday people are willing to trade their hard-earned dollars for because they believe that makes their life better. And that is why we have this great America that this week we need to be really grateful for. So, Jason McBride, thank you so much.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving week, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow, Kim.
Sounds great.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
This is my country, land of my birth.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And you can always email me, Kim at KimMunson.com as well. It is Thanksgiving week. There is so much to be grateful for, and I'm grateful that we are going through the Federalist Papers. This has been fascinating this year, Ben Martin.
Well, I've enjoyed it, too. I really have. You know, it's so much fun. And it, you always learn more when you teach it or when you talk about it than you do when you listen to it. So
yeah, we are learning a lot. So we have today and then next month we're going to finish it up. So yes. Congratulations to you, all of you listeners out there. So Ben Martin, you are a patriotic historian. I've taken some classes that you have taught and I learned so much. So thank you. And you're a former Army Ranger. Thank you for your service. So let's jump in here now regarding what the Federalist Papers had to say about the judiciary branch.
The judiciary. Thank you. Well, let's talk about that. The judiciary section of the Federalist Papers consists of six essays, number 78 through 83, for all you guys that are following, you know, in your text. So in those Federalist Papers, number 78 through 83, Publius examines the third branch, which is called the judiciary. And the most significant of these essays is the first one, in which he sets forth the case for judicial review, which is very important, as we all know. And what he describes is the power of the courts to declare all acts of the legislature contrary to the manifest tenor of the Constitution void.
Wow.
That is really big. And so that's where they assert their powers of that branch, of the judiciary branch. So we talk about that. And in 78, Publius defends the constitutional provision for tenure being good behavior for the justices. It's sort of like going back to what we were talking about in the executive, where we talked about duration. Mm-hmm. We're talking about tenure. And he also, in 78, talks about the support, like we were talking about before, the support for the judiciary. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about the exact same thing, saying that the legislature does not have the power to change its level of compensation to the justices during their tenure.
Okay.
You know, without their approval, as we know now. But so those things are really, really important. The tenure, the support for those, the way that they are selected. And so then he talks about what the character of the judiciary is. He said, in the course of this defense, for those provisions or tenure being for life as long as good behavior and for support, he notes the feebleism of judiciary relative to the other branches of government. He makes some pretty great quotations here. He says it has no control over either the sword or the purse, which is really important. It can take no active resolution whatever. It will always be the least dangerous to the political rights of the Constitution, and it possesses neither force nor will. Neither force nor will. That is really important because it doesn't. It will always be the least, and its power is merely judgment, as they say.
Okay, so on that, Ben, neither force nor will, though, we have seen the judiciary use force and their will as well. So what would you say to that?
Well, I would say that that's happened in every branch of government, that every branch of government has stepped past what its confinement is to, you know, what the parameters are for its exercise of power. And it's up to the it's up to us as the people to pull them back in. It's up to us as the people through our elected representatives also to pull them back through. And our elected representatives are in Congress and they're in the executive branch too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to really us to hold them accountable to making sure that they hold the other branches accountable. And that goes back to 51 when we talk about that. Remember to give each branch the energy and or the power, whichever you want to use, the energy or the power, and the interest to do that. And part of that interest comes from us, that we should force them to do that. But in order for us to do that, as I talked about last time on there, we have to be people that know what our government is. As Madison said, Madison, one of the great authors of this thing, said, only a well-instructed people can be permanently a free people.
And Ben, that's one of the reasons why we do this show.
You're exactly right.
Is because I think that, you know, I think what we compete with is all of this stuff that is coming at us. And then a lot of things that we look at are just surface because we're so busy and we think it's complicated. And that is why we are doing this show, is to get back, or maybe not get back, but to get to the foundation. Because these principles, these ideas are so important. They were put in place so that people had their rights of life, liberty, and happiness protected.
Right.
And that's why this is so important. Now, the judiciary has gotten active,
right,
and they have used force.
Right.
And that is totally antithetical to what the Federalist Papers says that the Constitution says.
Right. And, you know, they did that during the time when Abraham Lincoln was there. You know, when Abraham Lincoln was our president, they got out of control. And the president said, he basically told them, he said, you know, try to force me to execute your decisions. I mean, he brought them back into line. You know, when they were trying to say, during that the Dred Scott decision was made, and he said, he just looked at those guys, you know, and he said, try to make me enforce that. I mean, and so he called the line and he pushed them back into place, and he did that against a lot of opposition, especially from the southern states.
Quick question, Lincoln. Habeas corpus. What's your comments on the fact that he had suspended that for a while?
Well, you know, I've had that raised in a lot of the times, especially when I talk about Lincoln. You know, a lot of people say, well, that was really wrong to do. Well, the main reason most people don't understand that, we were at war then, and that gives him executive powers as a commander-in-chief. That you don't, those are extraordinary powers that you don't exercise during the time. And you have to look at where Washington, D.C. was. And when you muster these soldiers to go out and fight a war, a lot of times that was a central hub, and he had to bring those soldiers through that hub. And surrounding that hub was the state of Maryland, which was not necessarily a free state, mm-hmm, totally. And so they said, well, we can affect the Civil War, we can affect the outcome of this war by stopping those trains. And you go, wait a minute, I'm the president right now, and more importantly, during this war, I'm the commander-in-chief, and you can't do that. And I'm telling you, you can't do that. And so he put those people in jail. And, you know, and you say, well, you know, he suspended habeas corpus. Well, yeah, he did. But it was important that he do that, or otherwise we wouldn't have the country that we have today. So you have to do that sometimes, and the president has to have that authority to do that. And that's why he said you can't have a feeble president, but you can't have a president that oversteps his bounds either. But I think that when you look at the war and his doing that, I think that that was all justified to bring us back together, because he said, you know, the Union, I have to keep the Union together for a lot of good reasons, the same ones that we quoted in the first part of the Federalist Papers. So
You know, and what's so interesting is we are seeing people today that are using the courts instead of bringing us together to divide us.
Right, and that's really wrong. It's really wrong.
Yeah.
It's really inappropriate, I guess. It's very wrong.
Yeah.
Wrong is a better word.
It gets you right
to the point.
Okay, but, continue on here.
Okay, so anyway, we have to talk about, so having stressed those things that he did in there, the permanency in office and the justified support for them, and that they can't have they can't be influenced by having their compensation changed by the legislature. He said you have to maintain a separation between the judiciary and the other branches to avoid tyranny. And so Publius goes on to contend that independent judiciary is essential in a limited constitution. And what he means by a limited constitution is a constitution which, as he puts it, contains specified exceptions to the legislative authority. At this juncture, he sets forth his famous argument for the judicial review. For the Constitution, he insists, must be viewed as a fundamental law, the embodiment of the constituent will of the people. And any legislative act contrary to the provisions of this fundamental law, in his views, must be regarded as void, which, you know, we talked about that in the opening of this. And to deny this conclusion, he contends, would be to affirm that the deputy is greater than his principal, that the servant is above his master, and most importantly for us in this government that we have under the Constitution, representatives of the people are superior to the people themselves. And, you know, so he says, if you do that, this is what you're saying. If you make laws that are contravening to the Constitution, that you're saying that all of these things are true, and those are ludicrous. You know, we know those aren't true. And that's the biggest thing, he says, to say that the legislature is more important than the people. And he says, you know, in our Constitution, and he cites the preamble too, we the people, it starts off with we the people of the United States. So we are the sovereigns, and that's self-government, you know, that nobody else had ever done before.
You know, just a quick note before we go to break. I was over at the post office one time, and I saw a gentleman who clearly looked to me like he was probably a recent immigrant, probably from somewhere in Africa, one of the countries in Africa. And he was getting more and more agitated, and the attendant at the post office was not really being very helpful. And And he looked at her and he said, but you work for me. And I thought,
exactly.
Oh, that is absolutely fascinating. So, hey, Ben Martin, let's go to break. We have one more segment on this. This is fascinating. This is the Kim Munson Show. Happy Thanksgiving week to all of you. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Denver, and the historic 88 Drive-In Theater for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at KimMunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, having a fabulous conversation with my friend Ben Martin, a patriotic historian, expert on the Federalist Papers, expert on Lincoln, former Army Ranger, And we are talking about the Federalist Papers. And happy Thanksgiving week to all of you out there. You know, it's time to stop and just look at all the blessings that we have. We are a blessed people. And instead of thinking about everything that's wrong with our country, let's come together and think about everything that's right.
Oh, that's so right. That's a good thing to say, especially on Thanksgiving.
For sure.
No kidding.
Okay, Ben Martin, we are talking about the judiciary. And you said during break there is a point that you want to make sure that people understand.
Yes, I do. I'd like to say for everybody that the last point that I wanted to make when he talks about the legislature making laws that contravene or contradictory to the Constitution. He says this, changes or alterations in the Constitution must be made through some solemn and authoritative act, i.e. through the amendment process outlined in Article 5 of the Constitution. So I just wanted to add that to the big picture here.
So when you see people or different organizations that are trying to skirt around what is in the Constitution, for example, this National Popular Vote Compact out there, that is actually totally unconstitutional. If they want to change the Electoral College, our founders said go through the amendment process, right?
To go through the amendment process, and he talks about it being a solemn act. You know, that's, again, we talk about responsibility. We go back to that solemn oath that you take in the Constitution. And so we take that as citizens and we take that as officials. And so I think that that's really important. And so that is outlined in the framers looked at that and they knew that there would have to be changes to the Constitution, changes that, you know, in process and stuff like that, but not changes to the principles which were the principles of liberty, which are found in our Declaration of Independence. And they look at those as universal and timeless. Mm-hmm. And so you can't change that. I mean, we have progressives that are trying to do that now. We have leftists that are trying to do that, but they really don't understand, I think, the importance of that and what that would do to their life. It might solve some immediate problem that they have for themselves individually or a small group, but that would be faction again, back that we talked mm-hmm. about in this in number 10, mm-hmm. and that would be wrong. And the long term, that would destroy your life, not solve those things that we talk about in the principles of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, making yourself the best person you can be. So those are really important.
Key, really important.
And so we look at this, and I'll go through some of the things. We already talked about 79 talks about compensation of the justice and the judges. And so we've already talked about that, and we don't need to do that. In 80, we talk a little bit about the powers of the judiciary, and I'm going to go through just a few of those so we can do that. And moreover, we talk about overturning the laws as a manifest contravention. We talked about that already. We talk about the judicial need for power of the judiciary coexistent with the legislature to provide for, and this is a quote, uniformity in the interpretation of the national laws. So they have to sometimes work together. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, our legislative process doesn't look at that. Although we put an order or a rule into the Congress a while back, which just seems like it's fallen into disuse again, that says when somebody presents a bill to be passed by the Congress, they have to put in there what part of the Constitution supports that, you know, it makes it mm-hmm. constitutional. I think that we've gotten away from that pretty.
I think that would be a good thing to add back in.
Yes. So the uniformity in the interpretation of the national laws and the need for the federal judiciary to act as an impartial arbiter in the case of admiralty jurisdictions, in the cases between two states and between one state and the citizens of another. Now, they write that in the Federalist Papers, but we know that that was changed by the 11th Amendment, and that was pulled out of there, between citizens of different states, and these provisions conform to what the power of the judiciary ought to be, the priority of delegating equity in jurisdictions. So that's a big one.
Okay, that word equity, we get that a lot today in America. But when they were talking about equity, it's not what these radical activists are thinking about in equity, right?
That's right. It's not equity of the results. It's equity, you know, according to justice. And if we remember back in 51, justice is the end of government. I mean, it's a final goal that you try to achieve in government. It's the end of civil society.
It's also impartial, right?
It shall ever be pursued until it either be obtained or liberty be lost in the process.
Okay.
That's really important. That's, you know, we talk about the essence of what our government is. And so when we talk about that, we go to 83, which in that one he says, Publius engages in a detailed response to the anti-federalists who argue that the proposed Constitution abolishes trial by jury in civil cases. And he says, you know, that's ludicrous. And then he gives several points, but three of those are really central. First, he rejects the notion that the silence of the proposed Constitution on this score can be interpreted as abolishing trial by jury in such cases. Secondly, he does not personally believe that trial by jury in all civil cases, unlike trial by jury in the criminal cases, is an indispensable safeguard to discretion. To the discretion of the Congress. And then in the third one, he says, because the practices of the states with regard to civil cases varied, the members of the convention wisely left this matter to the discretion of the Congress. Because difficulty of establishing a general rule and impropriety of such a general rule in certain cases.
Okay.
And so the concluding remarks in this one, and it's in there, and it says the truth is that the general genius of a government, you have to follow this because they have these phrases in there, you know, that are almost parenthetical. But he says the truth is that the general genius of a government is all that can be substantially relied upon for permanent effects. Particular provisions, though not altogether useless, have far less virtue and efficacy than are commonly ascribed to them, and the one of them will never be, with men of sound discernment, a decisive objection to any plan which exhibits the leading characters of a good government. It certainly sounds a little harsh and extraordinary to affirm that there is no security for liberty in a constitution which expressly established the right of trial by jury in criminal cases, because it does not do so in civil cases also. So that, it's, to me, it's really important, and it sums up this whole section of the Federalist Papers. And I just wanted to say one other thing that we're talking about, because this is Thanksgiving Day, and I just want to say what one of our great presidents, Silent Cal, said way back when, over 100 years ago, almost 100 years ago, when he said to live, and that's what we should all be thankful for today, or not today, but this week, as we sit down and we think about Thanksgiving and the things we should be thankful for. And it says to live under the American Constitution is the greatest political privilege ever accorded to the human race.
Wow. And it truly, truly is. And I think that we take it for granted.
We do.
And this narrative out there of envy and trying to tear down the Constitution and trying to tear down the America, we need to come together. We need to unite behind this fabulous document. So we have just a couple of minutes left today. What's your final thought on all this, Ben Martin?
Well, I think that it begs us, it commands us, you know, as our framers and our founders did, to read and understand this. Because mm-hmm. I think if you do read and understand it, you can't be opposed to it, because it protects us. It fulfills all the things that are said in the preamble of the Constitution. And Most people don't even know that, but it talks about the establishment of justice, first of all, and we go back to 51, which talks about that in there, and that justice is the end of civil society. It's the end of government first. It's the end goal of government is what it, mm-hmm. is what it implies, okay? But, you know, people look at it maybe in the wrong context in that way. But it's really, really important that we do that. And it does all the things that it talks about, the utility of the union in the first part of this, when it talks about the protection from foreign forces, the protection from internal strife. It, you know, these are all of the things that are important to us that allow us to be able to exercise those rights that we have, the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it has to be protected. And that's this is really the essence of what government is. And those things are found in our preamble to our Constitution here. And they're all talked about in this thing. And so if you learn it, and it's all, you know, it's 4,000 words. Our Constitution is one of the shortest documents and easy to understand. They wrote it particularly so that you wouldn't have to have a law degree to understand the meaning of the Constitution. And it's based upon the principles of liberty that are found in our Declaration of Independence.
It's a pretty amazing document, that's for sure. So, Ben Martin, Thanksgiving week, first of all, I want to say thank you to you. You're a treasured friend and really appreciate you being here.
So are you.
And thank you to the Harris family who has sponsored this this whole study on the Federalist Papers. We'll finish it up next month.
My thanks to them, too.
Yeah,
it's
wonderful. Most definitely. And so, Ben Martin, thank you so much, and happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Happy Thanksgiving, too, to everybody out there, and especially to you and your family, Kim.
Thank you. And our quote for today is from Calvin Coolidge. He says, "We do not need more intellectual power. We need more moral power. We do not need more knowledge. We need more character. We do not need more government, we need more culture. We do not need more law, we need more religion. We do not need more of the things that are seen, we need more of the things that are unseen." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
And I don't want no one to cry. But tell them